Namaste Girirajaya. Shri Govardhana Namine. Ashesha Klesha Nashaya. Paramananda Daine. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Simate Bhakti Vedantas Swami Nitti Namine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Bhaskaryade Zadarine He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanda Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Suti Devi Panamami Hari Priye Sri Krishna Chaitana Prabhu Nitananda Sri Advaita Garadhara Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Before starting this katha, I would like to refer to another katha, another discussion which took place in the Upanishadic times and is recorded in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. There we find the great saint Yajnavalkya sitting on a placid lake, by the shore of the lake, answering the questions of Maitri. Maitri and Yajnavalkya once were king and queen. But when Yajnavalkya decided to give up his kingdom, Maitri decided to follow her husband and become a forest-dwelling saintly lady who is really known for asking very, very pertinent questions to Yajnavalkya and extracting jewels of knowledge, really, out of him. We had the situation at the beginning of the katha that when Parikshit Maharaj was described as Bhagavad Uttama, the highest of devotees, for this his quality of relishing Krishna Katha is ever fresh and being therefore very eager to hear. So Maitri, with the same eagerness, asked on that morning Guru Yajnavalkya, what are the two needs of every human being that, or which, when they are fulfilled, leave no other need in the heart? It might be a little difficult expressed. Let me be very simple and clear. What needs do we have? Burning needs as human beings, which absolutely need to be fulfilled over all other needs. What are these two needs? And further, they must be so burning, they must be so essential to our humanness that when they are fulfilled, we just don't need anything else. We are just so satisfied. What are these two needs? To be loved. I think that's very, very clear. When a child doesn't have the love of his mother, it will die. Over and above food or milk, is the need of love for the child, something which has been proven in very complicated psychological experiments. And so is with a grown-up person. If a person is not receiving love or appreciation or affection in some ways from someone, then he will develop idiosyncrasies. He will, in order to protect himself, he will have some protective mechanism jumping up, and he will look funny to others. The other need is to express love to just someone. So Yajnavalkya, when he heard these questions, the two needs, the most important needs, which when they are fulfilled, one is totally satisfied. It was difficult for him as a former king and as an ascetic. He went into deep meditation. He went, you could say, on the bottom of the ocean of truth and retrieved these two answers which you have already given. You are maybe, you know, at least I can say for most of us, we are still very much in our human dress, and it's very important for us to feel this. Now, with these two needs, to experience love and to give love, a lot of problems have happened in human society because these needs are so burning, but it's so rare that one is loved and one can express his love in the way one needs, that a lot of problems have happened. Crimes have happened, some of them so nasty, some of them sexual crimes. It has been compensated. People have said, okay, I don't get any love, but at least let me get with a non-person. But I will strive for that the people give me a recognition, name, fame, and glory. It's a big, big, big subject matter, not for now and not for here, to discuss what happens when these needs are not fulfilled. In spiritual circles, it can happen. The people who have not received love, they enter into ashrams where they are not, where there is no where they are lonely, wandering saints. But then, because the need is so pressing, they will try to compensate it. They will try to become famous. They will try to become glorified. Some will become gurus to have admiring disciples, just to compensate this. It is a big, big subject. And if I would now enter into the unpleasant dark shadows of unfulfilled love, you would really feel uncomfortable, because it concerns many, many, many of us in some ways or another. People become sick if they don't get love and if they can't express love. It's a problem. But it is always difficult to get this. And in today's Qatar, we will attempt to show how the most successful individuals have, learned to experience being loved and giving love in relationship to God. Great saints have given up the world of false love where these two needs are rarely met and surrendered everything and found their fulfillment in relating to Krishna. And we will hear about this a little bit today. We ask for the blessing of Shukadev Goswami and for all of you, because it is a very, very important subject matter. Do you recognize the importance for your life? Yes? Some of us are even too shy to nod their heads. But I can see the sparkle of interest in their eyes and know that they also feel it is. Lord Krishna is a loving God, and his desire to engage in loving relationships is unlimited. So he had insinuated this pastime where apparently Brahma came to test his godhood. He used this situation to fulfill his interest, not to fulfill just Brahma's interest, that he proves to Brahma that he's the master of Brahma. No, he used this as a pretext to fulfill his interest, to really show the world. No, first of all, nothing to show. First of all, to experience loving relationships with unlimited numbers of devotees in different rasas. And then to also to expand his pastimes in such a way that the love-hungry souls of this world, who have these burning needs, pressing needs, can understand that for the fulfillment of the needs, Krishna is the best address. We remember Krishna had expanded himself into all those calves which Brahma had stolen. He had expanded himself into all these boys, cowherd boys, and he had not missed one detail. We heard yesterday, that comes from one acharya, that even the ripped cloth of one cowherd boy, let us call him Kinkini, when Krishna duplicated him, this Kinkini, it was looking exactly like the ripped cloth of Kinkini. There was no possibility to find out any difference. He was so meticulous in his expansions. He really didn't want anyone to find out. He even wanted to deceive the Guru Tattva, his elder brother Brahma, Balaram. He wanted to cover himself and then go instead of the cowherd boys and the calves to their respective mothers and drink their milk and engage in loving pastimes. That was Krishna's genius. And he wanted to show Brahma in some ways, but that was secondary. So before all these expanded boys entered their homes, they announced themselves with playing their flutes. And the parents knew our boys have come home. The mothers felt motherly bhavas coming up. And, you know, this happens every day in the Uttaragoshta pastime, in the afternoon. The mothers can identify that now finally at the close of the day, everyone comes back, Krishna and their sons, by hearing the flute concert, which they make. They're very musical and they like to make these concerts. They use flutes, but also pan pipes, you know, and so on. It is now very difficult, and it is next to impossible. Only by the mercy of Shukadev, we can maybe hope to describe what happened now. As the cowherd boys entered the homes, please remember, and I can't say it all that in each sentence, this is now Krishna entering the homes. First of all, the flute playing had an unprecedented effect. The mothers were feeling as if they were falling into an ocean of bliss when they saw their little boys. Some of these mothers had already new babies whom they were accustomed to give all of their attention. But the moment the doors opened and they saw their boys, they did something they had never done before. They put their little babies, who were at that time suckling their breasts, to the side and just said to their boys, "Please, Kinkini, come to the lap of your loving mother." And Kinkini smiled the way only Kinkini smile can smile and went on the lap of his mother. But as he began to drink the milk of the mother, which his mother had not given him, because after all there was another baby, there's limited supply of milk and the boys are big, they have to learn to be independent of the breasts of their mothers. When he began to take the milk, his mother felt such bliss like she had never felt in her life. You must know all the mothers in Vrindavan harbored one secret desire. Their desire was, if only the son of Yashoda, Yashoda Nandan, could become my son. This was all the mothers felt. And the bliss which they felt from having own boys, you know, was pleasure, was because of a specific realization the mothers had. The mother thought, my boy is related to Krishna. That's why, and that's the reason why they loved him. Because remember, the Brijbasis, they have in their heart raga, that is unprecedented love, something which we cannot imagine in this world, for Krishna only. So the reason why they loved their cowherd, their boys, was only because of Krishna having their boys as his friends. No? So, but now the situation had changed. Their boys were somewhere else, but now Krishna sat on their lap. There is a verse which Shukadev Goswami says about this. He says, the mothers of the boys, upon hearing the sounds of the flutes and bugles being played by their sons, immediately rose from their household tasks. See, They must have kept some household tasks before, but now they heard Krishna playing flute. So immediately they dropped everything. They lifted their boys onto their laps, embraced them with both arms, and began to feed them with their own breast milk, which flowed forth because of extreme love which they felt for Krishna. Actually, Krishna is everything, but at that time, expressing extreme love and affection, they took special pleasure in feeding Krishna, the Param Brahman, and Krishna drank the milk from his respective mothers as if it were a nectarian beverage. Prabhupada comments, they enhanced their special love for Krishna by now embracing him and feeding him, and Krishna tasted their breast milk to be just like a nectarian beverage. While thus bewildering Brahma, that was a side effect, he enjoyed the special transcendental pleasure created by Yoga Maya between all the other mothers and himself. The same thing happened in relationship of the calves, or of the cows, I'm sorry, to their calves. They began to lick their calves as if they were devouring them. They were so enthusiastic and couldn't stop, because it was Krishna, the self-same Krishna, whom they now fed. You might ask yourself, why is Krishna so attractive? The answer is that everything about Krishna is attractive in the superlative form. His form, for instance, is so attractive that millions of cupids just swoon when they see him. Just the fragrance emanating from all the parts of Krishna's body is so attractive that the mind of everyone is robbed and stolen and can only think of the fragrance and nothing more. The mind goes blank when someone sees Krishna or his form or smells Krishna's beautiful fragrance. In this way, Krishna is attractive to the superlative degree. There is a very nice song in this connection, a song composed by one Brijbasi composer who has sung a song to his eyelid. He says, "O chokidar of my eye." A chokidar is a guard who has to guard the property so that no thief steals. So the song goes, "O my eyelid, guardian of my eye." Hari Hari Bo.
I will later introduce you as a special surprise.
"O guardian of my eye, why have you slept and neglected your duty? Today I saw the form of Shyam, and he passed by you and went into my heart and stolen everything from me. I'm plundered now. Since I saw Shyam Sundar Krishna, my mind is no longer with me. I'm helpless. I'm wandering around in this world without my most important property, my mind. And you, guardian of my eye, are the sole responsible person. I have you just to guard my eye from hurt. You know, when something comes to our eye, the eyelid closes. But you have slept, you fool. Now, Shyam Sundar has made me a hopeless wanderer, a mendicant in the forest of Vrindavan. Oh, Chokidar of my eye, you have done very wrong. You know, in poesy, such hard accusations are, of course, praises, you know, saying that, good that you didn't sleep this one time. Good that you kept open so that I could drink the nectarian sweetness of Krishna. Those who have even only a small inkling of Krishna have left their homes and wandered the path of the ecstatic human beings, never to return to their home. So now Krishna had entered the home of the all the Brijbasis and played his miracle there. Jiva Goswami makes a very, very interesting point. He says the love which the mothers and the cows felt for their sons and their calves, which were Krishna, were actually doubly as high as the love which Mother Yashoda felt for Krishna. And this is a mystery. We will have to try to understand why the ocean of their love swelled to unprecedented dimensions. See, Shukadev Goswami said that these mothers who received Krishna in disguise massaged the bodies of their sons with fragrant oils like always. They bathed their bodies, which were full of dust. They decorated their boys. They always do this. And they caressed them. And they sang them to sleep ultimately. But on this particular day, when Krishna came in the disguise of their children to them, the love of these mothers were so unprecedented, and something happened to Krishna, which some philosophers say is a fault. As he felt how the love of his mothers, of these mothers, was growing and growing and swelling, his love for them grew to extraordinary proportions. In other words, when Krishna had expanded himself into Kinkini, he didn't deal with his mother any longer the way Kinkini dealt with his mother. Here on this one point, Krishna blew it, you would say in New York slang. Krishna couldn't keep up his disguise any longer. It broke down and he loved the mother of Kinkini to a degree which Kinkini himself is impossible to love, to express love. Krishna, in other words, as he was receiving the love of the Brijbasis, felt so stimulated that his own loving inclinations were nourished to a degree that he went wild with bliss. And he an utsava of prema happened in Vrindavan, which was never ever seen and experienced before. The devotees, the Brijbasis, were rolling helplessly with love. They were holding their sons and caressing them and muttering helplessly, "Oh, oh, ah, are, are." And Krishna, in the disguise of their sons, was responding like this. He was drinking and not stopping to drink the milk of the mothers. He was just so ecstatic. I will now make a philosophical point, which I feel is very important for us conditioned souls. In philosophy, we know that every substance has what is called a vastu shakti, that is an energy which is inherent in the substance. For instance, water can quench thirst, and fire is always has heat, no? And light. It's the vastu shakti. Now, in this case which we are hearing about from the Bhagavatam, Krishna was not seen to be Krishna by these mothers because he had expanded himself into the boys and the calves which were stolen by Brahma. But still, he kept his vastu shakti, although in a way he was covered. He kept his vastu shakti and gave the devotees an amount of bliss and bhava which was really unprecedented, which could only be felt in direct relationship with God. This is the one of the, I feel, very important substances, lessons for us to learn. I want to make it a little clear. Have you ever gone barefoot on a live wire which is covered with straw? Most probably you would say, what is he talking about? One moment, I have to concentrate a little bit to get this point. Let me make it a little simpler. Imagine there is a live wire. Do you know what is a live wire? Because some of us speak Russian and Persian and everything. Live wire is like an wire which is full of electricity and conducts the electricity. Okay? It's when you touch it, you go. That's a live wire. It makes you alive also. And then might kill you, you know. So imagine there is a live wire going on the ground and it is covered by straw. That's a typical branch experience, you know. A farmer has this and the straw all over the place and the live wire. Now imagine you are walking barefoot there and you touch the live wire because you don't see it, it's covered. Although you don't see it, you will experience the vastu shakti, the inherent energy of the live wire by going and flashes will come out of your eyes and your ears because the vastu shakti remains, although the vastu may be covered. In the same way, Krishna's tremendous attractiveness remained, although he was covered with the external appearances of the cowherd boys and calves. And in this way, all of Braj was alive with prema, the highest degree of prema. And Krishna was relishing this situation to a superlative degree. I would like to make this point in relationship to Krishna in a very disguised form, that is the holy name. With your rational intelligence, you may not understand that Binadvang Nama Namino, the name, is identical with the named. But as you touch the holy name consistently, it will act in a degree that the boundless ignorance which is covering our souls will be pierced, and the holy name will be recognized by you as Krishna himself. The Vastu Shakti of Krishna, even when he comes as the name, is always there. And if you take that name, at that time, if you take it with full heart, you and free from aparat, free from covering, it will work on your soul, and it will set your soul ablaze. I would like to raise your arms and repeat after me the names which on this day were chanted by the Brijbasis. It is in Bhagavatam. Govinda!
Govinda!
Damodar!
Damodar!
Madhava!
Madhava!
Hare Krishna. Excuse me. There is a song by Bilwa Mangala Thakur which describes Govinda Damodara Madhaveti, Govinda Damodara Madhaveti. A song which the Brijbasis sang. These names slipped out of their tongues when Krishna sat on their laps. They sing this all the time, I mean, not just at that time. So, my dear devotees and my dear skeptics, Hare Krishna, we have also newcomers amongst us who think, what are we hearing? If even a material object like a vaya, which is lying in the barn of a Indian farmer, displays his Vastu Shakti, although it is covered, Krishna, who comes in many covered forms, has a Vastu Shakti which works on us. For instance, Giriraj. For our eyes, we may think a mountain is there, but if we stay long enough next to Giriraj, Giriraj will act on our heart by taking all the miseries and anxieties away from us and Paramananda Daini, give us the highest bliss. Please take this point out of this class into your life. God comes to us in covered forms because we are covered. We cannot see. We are blind to Sachit Ananda, that is the eternal spiritual kingdom which is composed of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. A body made out of eternity and bliss and knowledge. I mean, how do you understand this? But in the spiritual world, that's what's going on. We cannot yet see. But associate with Krishna, with his holy name, with Giriraj, with everything, and you will experience something unprecedented. Why was Krishna's love greater than the love of the boys in which he expanded? Although he initially wanted, everything was the same. Why was the love not the same? Because there is one rule in Krishna's kingdom, or in Krishna consciousness, in the spiritual domain. It goes, Yeyatamang prapatyante tams tatami bhajam yaham. In the degree in which you surrender to the Lord reveals himself. Actually, the acharyas say, not in the same degree. He's not a merchant. I gave you $10. I gave you $10. Now, Krishna, you give $10 back. No, he gives in tremendous amounts back, much more than it's given. Sorry, I'm getting a little carried away here. I should go a little bit more German, I understand. Let's quote the Gopal Tapani Upanishad to sober a little bit down. The Gopal Tapani Upanishad on this point calls this land Mathura Dham. Matu means that which churns and manifests, and Mathura means Bhagavan is made manifest in Mathura by means of the bhakti sadhana. This is the Gopal Tapani Upanishads. Actually, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains the Gopal Tapani Upanishad. When it says Mathura for this dham, it means Krishna becomes manifest in this dham when you only touch it even a little with a bhakti sadhana. That's why Rupa Goswami says, only someone who comes to the dham and has slight contact with the dham will develop a bhava. There's a first-class scholar in the world of academics who have translated this verses from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and has very nicely it comes out that even a slight contact with the dham makes Krishna manifest. Even though we see plastic bags and the spit of the pigs on the ground, it doesn't stop. This covering does not stop this sacred place to manifest Krishna. It is worthwhile for us to remember these loving scenes, how Krishna in the disguise of the cowherd boys was readied by his mothers the next morning, how they could almost not let him go out of their embrace, and how Krishna in the form of the cowherd boys and the calves was leaving the home and entering into the forest of Vrindavan, how the Vrindavan forest greeted the Lord, how the trees bowed down to offer their fruits to his lotus feet, how this was happening in a superlative degree, how Krishna joked with Krishna, you know, they're all cowherd boys, all Krishna, how they laughed, how they danced, how they expressed their love to each other. Because our goal is, and our need is, to enter into this loving relationship. All of us who have these two needs, to be loved and to express our love, in trying to do this, we always try to make our partner or our friend or the devotees next to us into a shape in which we imagine them. They should be like that. Then I would be satisfied with them. But unfortunately, no one ever does this. I'm not experienced, but I heard the secret of the Grihastha ashram, that sometimes the man wants his wife to be exactly to his expectation, and the wife wants the man exactly to his expectations. But you can never mold a human being like clay. It does not work. It creates frustrations. In all our relationships, we hear from the Bhagavatam, we really only look for the one who is dear to our Atma, Krishna, within our heart. But if we want to make our partner unlimitedly attractive like Krishna, we will fail. If we want to make our partner Rasaraj, the king of loving relationships, we fail. They cannot do this. They are human beings like we are, with expectations and karmas and so on and so forth. But if we learn to approach Krishna, offering him our love and feeling his love, we feel for the first time unlimited satisfaction in us. And that unlimited satisfaction will make us love-hungry human beings. For the first time, humans who are able to give love, because we are sampurna, we are fulfilled by the love which we feel in our relationship with Krishna. Even though Krishna comes to us in covered forms, like the Holy Name, if you learn to make your relationship with the Holy Name through thick and thin, he will fulfill your needs for the love. So, I will now come to the end and soon to the beginning of my surprise for today. let us just go again back to the Leela. Krishna kept his disguise for a full year. He was acting like this and standing in for the cowherd boys who had been kidnapped by Brahma. And he was very happy in that year because he experienced the love of his devotees. Krishna, in his own words, says that that the devotees, his devotees, are most attractive for him, and amongst his devotees, the Brijbasis are his dearest. He wrote many letters to the Brijbasis, which are still there, where he expresses his love for them, and it's quite amazing. But I won't get into this. Towards the end of the year, however, something happened which rose the suspicion of Lord Balaram, Krishna's first expansion. Because there was now such a love festival every day in Braj, Balaram felt, wait a minute, this never was there before. What is different? And there was one incident where Balaram's suspicion grew as high as the Himalayan mountains. Do you want to know this incident? Why? Hare Krishna. I'm sorry. Even if you would say no, I would continue because it's so good, you know. Listen what happened. Krishna and the cowherd boys were at that time still very young, around 5 years old. And they were not given charge of the cows, but only of the calves, smaller cows. Huh? So they were just herding the calves, Krishna and his expansions, the cowherd boys, were just herding the calves, and they came by the Govardhan Hill. They came from Radhakund and Syamkund and came to Manasiganga. At that time, the Govardhan Giriraj was much higher than now. And there were the cows who were grazing on top of Giriraj's mountain ridge, it's called, you know, the top of the Giriraj. They were grazing on these beautiful, on this wonderful grass, which increases the milk and which is very soft and fragrant. And they were just munching away. The cowherd men who took care of the grown-out calves were there, and they were talking about what they experienced at home with their boys. When my boy sat on my lap, I don't know, I just shook and cried with love. And another cowherd boy said, "You also? I don't know what's with me. I'm so much baba." They were just talking when all of a sudden the cows began to stir. These cows had already new calves who were, but they looked down and they saw their older calves, which they, you know, which were the Krishna expanded calves, with the boys, you know, happily walking around. Balaram was there, the boys were dancing and playing flute. The cows, when they saw these calves, they just ran down Giriraj. And Giriraj is very steep, so they had to jump. And their humps, Sukadev Goswami was saying, started to move up and down. They ran as if they ran with 2 feet only. Because somehow by jumping, I really don't know how a cow does it, but it must, you know, when jumping, come the hind legs come forward and it lands on the four legs, and then zoop, it's like an artistic display of jumping. So they just came down like a river of milk. The cowherd boy man started to take their sticks in order to keep the cows from going down and losing all their milk on their calves, you know, and protecting the cows. But the cows, one acharya describes, they're simply saying, "Don't stop us, we are on a love mission." And they jumped over the raised sticks of the cowherd men. Just imagine, cows are not known for high jumping skills, you know, but they jumped and they ran down like a river of milk, and they came to their calves and began to feed them and lick them and display ecstatic symptoms of love, while the little cowherd boys just smiled, waiting. Now the cowherd men felt a mixture of anger that the cows had escaped them, and shame. Shame because it appeared that they were not able to control their cows. So they ran very angry and ashamed. It was a mixture of emotions down. But when they saw their little boys, all their anger and shame disappeared. They jumped at the boys, took them up, lifted their turban and started to sniff. Sniff is not a good word. Smell their fragrant hair, which is a sign of parental affection in India, or in Braj. And it was an ocean of love which happened. All the anger and shame disappeared, and they were just not able to separate themselves from their boys, just like the cows and the calves were just there. So Balaram stood there at the corner, looked at all this, and just was not believing what he saw. The acharya said, for one, almost an entire year, this is 6 days before the year closes, Krishna had used his powerful yoga maya even on Balaram, so that he wouldn't notice anything. But now, Krishna, for his own purposes, began to withdraw his yoga maya more and more. So Balaram saw, wait a minute. Then he turned to Krishna and he said, what is this wonderful phenomenon? The affection of all the inhabitants of Braj, including me, towards these boys and calves is increasing as never before. Just like our affection for you, Krishna, the super soul of all living entity. But why was I admire all the time and not noticing this before? This is the same love which we feel to Krishna. What is this mystic power which kept me? And where has she come from? Is she a demigod or a demoness? You must know, demigods can exert their maya on you, and you don't know anything any longer. Demons can do this the same, can do this also. This must be the illusion. But then he thought, no demon can enchant me. No demigod can cover me. It must be the yoga maya energy of my master Lord Krishna. For who else than Krishna can bewilder me? And so he went to Krishna and said, Krishna, can you please explain what is happening? Krishna said, come with me. And they went to a solitude grove and Krishna said, Balaram, it's me. The cowherd boys and the calves, they're me. And then he said, please forgive me. Never, said Balaram. No, you must know, said Krishna, that Brahma, in order to test me and see what I was capable of doing, has stolen the cowherd boys and the calves. And so I expanded myself because I will show Brahma who I really am in 6 days. But why did you put me in illusion? I'm your elder brother. This is not proper conduct, said Balaram. Krishna said, my dear brother, you love Sridham and Subal the same way I love them. It was your birthday when you stayed at home, when Subal and Sridham and all the others came with me and were stolen by Brahma. You would have died in grief when you would not have been with your beloved friends, Subal and Sridham and all the others. So I needed, for my own purposes, to relish a little love. Then Krishna came out with this soul reason. I needed to expand myself and keep on the disguise. And I wanted to do this for 1 year. When you do this, when your next birthday comes, in 6 days, everything will be over. Balaram said, you do what you do. He was a little angry, but what could he do? Because he was angry, Krishna had deceived him and he was separated from Subal and Sridham, whom he loved so much. You must understand, there is a lot of love. Balaram said, where are Subal and Sridham now? I understand you stand in for them, but where are my Subal and Sridham? Krishna said, they are safe somewhere. And then he revealed to them, to Balaram, a chapter of his Braj pastimes. They are there at the bank of the Yamuna. The parents cannot see them. No one can see them. And they are enjoying loving pastimes. And you are also there in that pocket of Vrindavan, carefully concealed, were my original associates, who cannot be stolen by Brahma or anyone, are playing with me. This is all Braj. I'm everywhere and you are everywhere. Don't be angry with me. This was the brotherly discussion. Balaram said, Tike. And they went out of the solitary groove where this inconceivable discussion took place. Now, I want to come to the end, and I would now like Jai Gopal to bring this discussion here. I would love to introduce a very dear guest to our Govardhan retreat. He's a resident for some time here at Govardhan. And in the academic world, he's known as the ultimate authority on, one of the ultimate authorities. But the contemporary person, there's also one Mr. Hardy, who's known on Vaishnavism, and his specialty is, and there he is the ultimate authority in the ultimate world, in the, not ultimate world, the unultimate world, the academic world. He's known there as the authority on Braj. And he's here for one whole year to research on Giriraj and write a book on Giri Govardhan, which it is well imaginable that this will be the ultimate book in the academic world on Giriraj. He has already published one book on the forests of Vrindavan and the Van Yatra. He has published a book on the Yamuna, and he has published a book on the secrets of Raganuga Bhakti, all in academic language. And now he wants to take on what is his life's project and his dearest project, to describe Giriraj in a way that the world, who believes more scholars than practicing Vaishnavas, some unfortunately, will understand. His name in the academic world is Professor David Haberman, but in the Vaishnava world, and he will address us most properly as a Vaishnava, his name is, listen to the beautiful name, it fits to this katha, therefore I've invited him today, Prem Das, no? the servant of love. So I want to invite Prem Das to come next to me. And I will request him to speak on Giriraj, on the glories of Giriraj to us. I request you to pay utmost attention, because a world-renowned scholar will now speak to us. Get your notebooks ready. I'm just saying like this. And I want you also that I will say at the end. So let me put this microphone properly.
So, Hare Krishna, good morning to everyone. I came to Giriraj to escape my life as a professor. I have to lecture almost every day there. But I ran away from that life for 1 year to be a student, because I enjoy being a student so much. It takes a lot to pull me out of that particular mood. But I am very, very happy to be here this morning, to be in the presence of my increasingly dear friend, Sachi Nandana Swamiji, and really I'm here because he has asked me to do so, and I'm just delighted to be in his presence, and if this is how I have to do it, then here I am. And I also am happy to be here this morning with all of you in what is called the Giriraj or Govardhan Tereti. That is this flat sacred land that surrounds the Govardhan Hill, because this is very, very special land. I suppose I'd like to move towards helping you understand a bit more about an inner meaning of Giriraj-ji. But in some sense, all of Braj itself is considered to be a manifestation of Krishna. So all of Braj is a sacred land. All of the parts of Braj are considered to be the parts of Krishna's body. So I guess I would like to move towards, and maybe end my comments this morning, by talking about what is the form of Krishna that is Giriraj Mountain. Really what I would like to do is talk about the mood of this place. We're living in a land that is imbued with such a powerful, joyful, loving spirit. And for me, maybe that's where I'd like to begin in thinking about Giriraj. I have the great fortune, as Swamiji has said, to be living here for most of a year. And in fact, I live on top of a 16th century temple in the town of Jatipura that we're all in here, just not far from here. And I have the great fortune of having a bedroom where the morning light, as it comes over the Srinathaji Mandir, spills its beauty onto the wall of my bedroom. And as I was coming out of my bedroom a couple days ago, I just walked out to darshan of Giriraj and feel so fortunate. And somehow I was thinking of the story of Krishna lifting Mount Govardhan with his little finger. And it says in the Bhagavat that he does it lilaya, as play. He is playing. And I began to think about that because the description of the storm that Indra unleashed on Braj out of his anger because the sacrifice was taken away from him, it's a horrific description. It makes some of the global warming storms that we are just now beginning to experience look like nothing. These are storms where they say the rain coming down was the size of columns. And there were thunder clouds with just loud, loud thunder. And hailstones so large they were knocking animals unconscious. That's the kind of storm that came down. And as I'm sure you're all aware, Krishna's response was to pick up the Govardhan Hill as one would pick up a mushroom that easily. And he held it up, again, lilaya, out of play. Out of loving play. And not he's not holding the mountain with great grudgery and not great terror of everything going on. He had a smile on his face. Look at all the paintings or the poetic descriptions of Krishna holding the mountain with his little finger. He has a smile on his face. So in a way, I would like to think about that smile a bit this morning. I think this is one of the things that Swamiji and I share a great deal, is wandering through Braj. And I was wandering one day with my dear friend Sham Das, who is not with us in bodily form, but very much with us here. And we were in Kamban. We were there for a great utsav that was happening at one of the Pushti Margiya temples in Kamban. And we were sitting on the roof, and I had a chance to talk with one of the young Balaks, one of the leaders in that particular Sampradaya. And I asked him a question that I just like to ask. I said, how can I possibly live in that loving bliss more and more? Right? I guess I'm thirsty for that in some sense. And he told me many things, but one thing he said to me was, we worship a God who is always smiling. So we too should always be smiling. Right. In a sense, I think what we share is we're all Krishna dasas or Krishna dasis, however you want to think of yourself. But what does that word das mean? And since I'm thinking of my dear friend Sham Das, I had the occasion to meet his Guruji and spend time with the two of them together. And when the favorite term that his Guruji liked to use in English for das, many translated as servant or even slave sometimes. And he resisted the translation of das with those words. And instead, what he offered as a proper English translation of das is the word follower. that we are followers of Krishna. Krishna is showing us the way into that loving bliss, right? And he is always smiling. I consider myself to be a student of the Braj Vaishnav traditions. I don't know if I'm a scholarly authority or not. I'll let you be the judge of that. But I am a student of these traditions. And one thing I've learned that they are quite different from the more macho ascetic traditions that often are informed by, I guess, what is most commonly known as Mayavad, a denial of the value of the world. One of the big questions in the Vedantic traditions is the jagat, is the world itself, the world we experience with our senses, is it sat or asat? Is it real or is it unreal? And all of the Vaishnava Vedantic teachings agree that the world is sat, that the world is real. It is a manifestation of Krishna. In fact, in the 16th chapter of Bhagavad, it is said that the teaching that the jagat is asat, that the world is unreal, is a demonic teaching. Right? So this is embracing the world. And how do we embrace the world? We do it with our senses. We do it with our emotions. So that this is not a tradition that somehow suppresses the emotions. There are many traditions that do that in India. Rupa Goswami, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, gives a very simple definition of bhakti. And it is harshikena, harshikesha sevanam bhaktir uchate. That is, that devotion is a loving service with the senses to the Lord of the senses. Well, what does that mean? Again, what I'm calling the macho ascetic traditions believe that the spiritual life involves suppressing emotions. Emotions are way too problematic, too troublous for us to follow. Right? So that Patanjali's definition of yoga is chitta vritti nirodha, really the cessation of fluctuations in the heart-mind. Chitta can be translated as heart, to somehow still the waves of the heart and the mind to come to those higher realizations. I don't think that's really what the bhakti teachers are saying. They would agree that emotions left in their ordinary state are very challenging to achieve the highest end. But emotions are way too powerful to somehow waste them. I guess if you can't deal with them, then fine, renounce them. But the higher path is to figure out how to use emotions for achieving what Swamiji called that loving relationship with Krishna. And that requires bhava, another term Swamiji used here, right? Bhava, which is often translated in this context as emotions. Emotions in the Gaudiya Sampradaya are considered to be an aspect of divinity. Rupa Goswami defines bhava as shuddha sattva visheshatma. That is, that it consists of a very, very special nature of shuddha sattva, a pure form of divinity. And his nephew Jiva Goswami comments on that and further expands it, saying that bhava is actually an aspect of hladini shakti, the highest blissful essential nature of Krishna. So these are the emotions. How do we begin to use emotions? In many ways, I regard the Braj Vaishnava traditions as a yoga of emotions. How to cultivate the emotions so that one can have that powerful relationship with Krishna. And so many ways to go with this. Let me think of the way I want to go. How to work on them in some sense. And it's very clear, Rupa Goswami is also very clear in saying that one way of doing that is to understand the true object of emotions. The story that we heard of Krishna taking the form of the cowherders and the cows that had been stolen by Brahma, is a story of the love itself being intensified by being directed towards the true Vishaya, the true emotional object, then, of emotions. Emotions, again, are not to be wasted. They have a great, great power in them. I would say that probably all Vedantic thinkers would agree that the goal is to establish what is called in Vedantic literature Brahm Sambandh, a loving relationship, to use the translation of Swamiji here, a loving relationship with Brahman, or Brahman, as we know, is the form of also Krishna. How to establish a loving relationship with Brahman or Krishna. And there are meditative traditions that suggest that the way of doing that is, again, to calm the mind, calm the emotions, push it all out of the way, and just focus on the impersonal, unmanifest form of Brahman. Well, how do you do that? I assume that some have probably been able to do that. But that's extremely difficult, Bhagavad Gita tells us in the 12th verse. How difficult is it then, if we want to focus your mind on anything, is very difficult. It looks like somehow somebody's chased the monkeys out of here, but there's so many monkeys around. They say that the human mind is like a monkey, always jumping around from this to that. How to keep it focused? If you've had that meditative experience of just trying to hold your mind on a single point, you know that it's always wandering off. And yet, if you've had that experience of being passionately in love with someone, how difficult is it to keep your mind focused on that person and thinking about that person? Probably not difficult at all. In fact, it's difficult not to keep your mind focused. That's all you can think about. That is the emotion that one wants to use then for that higher spiritual end of establishing the highest relationship. I like to tell a story that is from one of the poets of this region, the Ashtachak poets. This is the story of Nandadas, because I think it shows this quality of somehow the traditions embrace the emotions, but understand that they need to be cultivated in a very particular way. And the story of Nandadas, at least as it's told in the Braj traditions, has it that Nandadas was the younger brother of Tulsidas, the great Ram Bhakta who lived in Banaras and composed the Ramcharitmanas. His younger brother Nandadas, however, was always getting in trouble, and Tulsidas felt responsible for taking care of his younger brother. And one day a troupe of actors came through Banaras, and Nandadas was very attracted to them. And so without his brother knowing, when they left town, he went with them and began to wander with them. One day, they arrived in a village in Rajasthan. And there they were performing, and Nandadas was with them. And he saw a woman, and he became completely smitten with that woman. And he took a vow never to drink water or eat food until he had seen her face that day. So he sat in front of her house just waiting for that darshan. The woman was married, and her husband discovered what Nandadas was doing, and he was outraged, and he went out and he confronted Nandadas. He said, "What are you doing? Get out of here." Nandadas said, "If you cause me to leave, I will commit suicide, and you will have the karma of my suicide on your head." And the husband at that point realized he was dealing with a really odd character, and he didn't know what to do, so he decided to go see his guru, who was the son of the great Acharya Vallabhacharya, and he was at that time residing in Gokul across the Yamuna River from here. And so they started their journey towards Gokul. And of course, they saw trailing behind them, here comes Nandadas following them. So when they got to the Yamuna River, the husband bribed the boatman not to take Nandadas across the river. Yamunaji, we could talk about Yamunaji all day, but Yamunaji functions as kind of a barrier into the higher forms of love. She is also a goddess of great, great transformation. She is a goddess who initiates divine souls into the ultimate relationship. And so they bribed the boatman not to take Nandadas across. And when they arrived at the house of their guru, he was very happy to see them and said, "Oh, I will prepare prasad for you." So they accepted his gracious offer and they went into a room for their prasad and they saw that there were three plates there. And they said, "Why three plates? There are only two of us." And their Guruji said to them, "Ah, but what about Nandadas? He's actually a divine soul. And as soon as he had darshan of Yamuna, the lust he felt for your wife was transformed into a deep love of Krishna. And Nandadas spent the rest of his life composing exquisitely beautiful poetry of the love affair of Radha and Krishna." So again, how to live in that blissful realm, how to cultivate emotions in a way that one can see the beauty that is somehow here, whether it's below the straw of the electric wire or whether it's just under the surface of the faces of those cow lads that Krishna had assumed the form of. That's really what it's all about. Well, why am I talking about this here? I don't want to take up a whole lot of time. I guess I'm supposed to talk about Giriraj. So let me shift in that direction. Here we are in the Govardhan Tereti, right? A space that is considered to be very, very auspicious for giving us this sense of loving joy. What is this mountain that we can see from here? I was happy. I wasn't sure we'd have darshan. And I must say, I was very, very happy when I walked into the garden from the street side. Just to the right as you come in is a beautifully decorated Giriraj Shila. Whoever was responsible for that, thank you very much. You gave great joy to my heart to see such a smiling face of Giriraj as I came in. And also, I was very happy to see that we could have darshan here, Sakshat darshan of Giriraj. What is that mountain? In some sense, it is a mountain. They say every stone from Giriraj, each and every stone, is a form of Purna Purushottam Bhagavan Krishna. But let's just start with the mountain. This is a very gracious form of Krishna. Some of the teachings have it that Krishna was here. How long ago? Some say 5,000 years, some give different dates, but that was during the Avatar Leela time when Krishna was present. He is no longer present, but he is very present in many, many forms. And one of the most powerful forms in which he is present is as Girirajji. And Giriraj is a very compassionate, very loving, very welcoming, very accessible form of divinity. This afternoon, you can walk over and you can have not only darshan of Giriraj, you can touch Giriraj, you can have sparshan. There's a direct experience. But this still is in that outward form, what the Bhagavad Gita calls the adibhautik form, a very important form. But I want to talk about then one other form maybe before I wrap up what I have to say here. And that is to talk about more that, I guess we would call it the esoteric, that secret side. What is Giriraj? What part of Krishna's body is Giriraj? And for this, I want to tell a story that I was just delighted to discover that is told in a text called the Garga Sanhita. And it's a story of how Giriraj came into being. There's many stories, how Giriraj then came from Golok Dham to here, and how from Himalayas to Braj and all. But I want to start with that original manifestation of Giriraj, because I think it's a story from which we learn so much. And it's a story that takes us into Golok Dham at a time and a place where Sri Radharani and Krishna have just finished a ras experience together. Great loving experience together. And Krishna looks over to Radharani and she gives him a sidelong glance. It just knocks his socks off, if I can use the New York language also. Just completely dazzles him. And Radharani sees the effect of her sidelong glance on Krishna. And she decides, oh, this is the very opportune moment for me to make a request. So what is her request? A new diamond ring, a Rolls Royce chariot, or whatever the occasion would be, opportunity for anything she wants. What does she ask for? She says, and he says, I will give you anything. And she says, here's my request. I would like you to make a place that is a secret place where we can make love together. And he realizes she's not just asking for something for herself. How could Radharani ask for that? She is asking for something that will enhance their love together. And he is deeply moved, and he says, Tathastu, so be it. And at that moment, out of his heart comes a fiery, say accompanied with water, interesting, a fiery sprout of his anuraga, of his loving passion. And it condenses then into the form of a huge mountain. Must be like molten lava sort of coming out. And it cools into this beautiful mountain with secret nikunjas for him to meet with Radharani in, and secret caves and waterfalls. And that's what Giridhaj is. It is the manifestation of Krishna's love for Radharani as a response to her love for him. So it's, in some sense, one can see it as a manifestation of either Krishna's love or Radha's love, or they're really the same anyway. That, to have that darshan of Giridhaj, is what I'm hoping for. And it certainly keeps a smile on my face in thinking about that possibility, and already just the hints of it that one can get by wandering around in this area. I think that would be a good place for me to stop. I see many smiles on your face, so I would just encourage all of you to keep smiling here and keep opening yourselves to the loving bliss that is ever present in this Govardhan Tereti.
Sadhu, sadhu. Well spoken. Thank you so very much. And really, you spoke so nicely as a bhakta, speaking to other bhaktas, and just very gladdening to our hearts. And I would like to encourage all of you to think deeply about this one point, that is to develop our emotions, to cultivate our emotions in relationship to Giriraj, which is one of the big differences, the big offers which the Vaishnava tradition says have to offer. I also like to request you to bless or give your good wishes, let us say, like this, to Premdas, so that he can manifest also something wonderful, a wonderful work, a wonderful book, which will actually make a bridge to many, many people who then will understand the treasures which can be found here at Giriraj's lotus feet. So you kindly let us raise our hands and joyously shout, Gaura Premanandi! Hari Hari Bol! Jai Jai Sri Radhe! Jai Jai Sri Radhe! Jai Jai Sri Radhe! Yeah. Hare Krishna. Yes, I would suggest to end this particular session, we can all turn towards Giriraj and just sing for 5 minutes together, glorifying him from our hearts. It will not be long because lunch break is also coming very soon. And in this way, we will end. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Request you now to somehow make a sambandha, a connection to Giriraj, by just consciously singing for him with an intention to please him by your singing. Please sing now. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Hare, Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Giri Govardhaneya, Giri Govardhaneya, Giri Govardhaneya, Giri Govardhaneya, Giri Govardhaneya, Giri Govardhaneya, Giri Govardhan, Jaya Giri Govardhan, Jaya
Thank you all very, very much for participating. And a special thanks to our dear guest, Premdas Prabhu, who has come with his good wife, and another devotee who is very much known to some of the retreatees who have come over the years. It's our Mohan Prabhu, the dear companion and assistant of our Syam Das, who used to address us yearly, briefly. So it's very, very nice bond of love between the different Vaishnava lineages, which take place right at the sacred valley next to Giriraj, which is a source of great joy. Your lunch prasadam, which is the mercy of Giriraj for some of us who have become hungry, is waiting for us. And our next session after the pause, which comes now, will be at 15 minutes to 5 back in the temple by Burijam Prabhu. I wish you a wonderful time, and I'm personally so grateful, Premdas, for what you said. It touched my heart deeply. I'm totally in bliss and very inspired to continue with the katha tomorrow, bringing more prem, bringing more of the wonderful love of the loving Lord out as the Brahma Vimohana Leela unfolds. Because the next thing is, Krishna will now deal directly with Lord Brahma, the creator, and that's really something. All the best, and Hare Krishna, Haribo. Hare.